Hello, friends. I'm the hour is late, but I am attempting to continue here. It's still the 6th of July, and I'll do my best to work with you. Carrying on with program number 7 in this rather awkward abbreviation that I have called Discipleship in the New Age, Volume 1, Section 1, Video Commentary. We finished a few pages last time, and we're just about at page 11. And in the new method that I have, it kind of is a little physically easier for me, and I hope it's okay for you. I let you know when I'm talking and when it's the Tibetan talking, but I don't go into the whole color coding business and the constant enlargement of significant words. You can look at the text and you can see, I may bold it a little bit, but you can see what is significant to you. And let's just say what the Tibetan has written is absolutely full of deep significance. I just don't know where people like you and I, or you and me, could pick up this kind of very solid information, unusually solid. The esoteric bookstores these days are just filled with a lot of nonsense and channeled writings that come more out of a latent egotism than they come out of a true contact with higher sources. What did DK says that maybe 96% or something like that of all these channeled writings are from the well-meaning unconscious mind of the channeler, and then when it comes to who's likely to be doing this, effectively, it is the students in the East who are still more sensitive. So maybe they eat up that 4%. It doesn't leave very much for the Western disciple. We really have to learn how to decentralize ourselves. Decentralization is such an important attitude. As you know, going along with etheric physical discipline, emotional dispassion, mental discrimination, and finally, personal decentralization. Easy to say those words, but difficult, to put it very simply, to take the eyes off the little personal self that are usually focused upon it with such preoccupation, with such concern. In our little segue here, DK says, as I work with you in the future, I shall not wait to wrap up the truths I have to say to each of you in such a way that they cannot hurt. And let us say, of course, when we are preoccupied with a system of truth and it turns out to be somewhat fallacious or maybe glamour-ridden or illusion-ridden, then the truth, as it actually is, will hurt our attachment to our usual preoccupation with glamour and illusion, not to mention the chaos of Maya. DK goes on to say, I shall not in the future consider your personality feelings. Let me pause to ask, does that mean that up to this point he has been considering their personality feelings? But anyway, this is his intention. I shall not in the future consider your personality feelings and reactions, because I count upon the sincerity of your purpose. So let us say that a sincere purpose can override much that one is usually attached to regarding one's personality feelings. Purpose triumphs. The purpose over the purpose from the angel of the presence triumphs over the usual hypersensitive personality reactions. Well, a lot of the students did have them, and some of them reacted in a very personal manner, so much so that they almost invalidated or did invalidate their usefulness to the group. I'm remembering one letter, I forget to whom it was, and it begins something like this: my brother, you have reacted so very personally to what I've said. That was the idea, you see. Now, obviously, DK's ideas here were of a high caliber, and he really didn't want to fuss around with attention to the personality. But as time went on, he did find that he had to address the personality and its obstructiveness often. And occasionally he would compliment the individual, which is always more dangerous than to point out a flaw. Because sometimes you compliment the individual on what they've done, and suddenly they develop a big head, you know. And the next thing you know, they're working in a way that is contrary to the group good. There was a man, maybe he was from California, and he kind of looked on at AAB's deteriorating physical condition, and he simply wanted to replace her. And he wanted to change the Tibetan's words and do a lot of things which diluted the Tibetan's message. Well, this was a the very same individual that the Tibetan noted in the following way, something like this: "You remind me of myself when I was preparing for the third initiation." Now, that would have been a very significant statement and very orienting for this individual. And maybe it was, but he took it too far and started to be ambitious for the role he could play after AAB passed away physically. And that wasn't at all what the Tibetan had in mind. Well, anyway, we came to the point here that we did a short program, Program 6, and we will be, this will also be a relatively short program. Program 7, it's still here in Finland anyway, the 6th of July, and we're beginning, we'll be coming up to quite a new section in Dyna, Volume 1, Section 1, a video commentary. So let's see what DK says. And I hope that you can follow the difference. Well, of course, I think you can, between when I'm reading Master DK's text and then when I'm elaborating on it. And in case that would look difficult to do, I try to be as clear as I can be about when I'm doing which. So DK goes on here. "It is perhaps wise to remember here that as a general rule," this is really interesting, "no one believes what others may tell him, no matter how apparent the truth or how much the person may protest that he accepts that truth." Now that's quite a statement, wouldn't you say? I mean, many of us say we believe the master who has proved himself has spoken, and we believe. But DK says that underneath it all, no, you don't really believe unless you've proven it to yourself. So he goes on to say, "Only those truths which are wrought out individually in the crucible of experience really penetrate into the living consciousness and bear fruit." So the crucible of experience is the key to really embracing a truth. And that's why occultism, of course, is much more than a system of belief. It's a system of practical experimentation in which we do establish something we believe because we've worked through it and it's part of our experience. Just pause for a moment and think, what do you believe? Why do you believe it? I guess I would say it turns out that It's a very radical statement. It's like saying, you say you believe, but you don't really believe. It's a bit like that extract that from the Tibetan that begins so many of the books. The idea is that when the intuition speaks and one fully realizes the truth of something, then one establishes that truth as part of one's customary perception, one's customary attitude, but not just to believe it because a teacher may have said it or a deva perhaps may have inspired it. No, it has to sink in and be inwardly confirmed by that part of us that is intuitive and which says, this I know. Going on, he goes on, but in this group effort which we are undertaking, the fact that all in the group are made aware of what is said to the individual in these groups of nine, you know, the fact that everybody in a way receives the instructions of every other member of the group of nine, DK says, may prove most useful and produce much more rapid adjustments than could otherwise be the case. Now let me add, did this happen? Well, DK knows what he was expecting and what the response was, and maybe it happened to a certain extent. Obviously, through great complexity of the history of the times and through the degree of sacrifice that group members were able to make or refused to make, they did not live up to DK's highest hopes for the group. And I'll just say, not yet, because this C group project, somewhere he tells us, is a 275-year project, and I guess reaches its fruition by the year 2200 or so. So, you know, he's saying maybe more rapid adjustments can be made because, in a way, all group members are privy to what the master is telling to each one of them. And let's say that that's why he is so careful about what he says, because he doesn't want to lead the other group members off into non-productive speculation about any one of the members. So maybe more rapid adjustments were made in some senses. They certainly could be made. But DK goes on to say, provided that unitedly and in love, they will then help their fellow disciple to change the undesirable condition. I would say that we're all aware, using what might be called the group gaze, of the difficulties that various disciples have with certain areas of behavior. Some might be too reticent, some might be too authoritarian or dictatorial. Some may go off on tangents which are irrelevant. There are many liabilities, and the group gaze at length reveals them. But of course, when the revelation comes, we don't fall into that third ray habit of criticism, usually destructive criticism, which is so destructive to the group loving integrity, or the loving group integrity. We begin with the will to love, but that, if we are successful, rapidly changes into true, spontaneous love itself. And so it is necessary to see what is our attitude towards our fellow group members and whether it is suffused with love and the ability to create harmony. That attitude is not far away, but it is subtle and perhaps not easy to achieve for certain ray types. So DK goes on and says, I count on one thing only, my brothers. And that is your deep sincerity. You know, this is what makes it possible for him to work with these people. They have, and would be with us. We have so many flaws, but if we are truly sincere, the sincerity will overcome the flaws. I'm thinking about that ray three, from which criticism arises, but I'm also thinking of DK's analysis, which reveals that a positive quality of sincerity can be found in the third ray also. And it means, of course, that we're not faking it and we truly do want the kind of progress that will come if we follow the instructions correctly. DK goes on, it is not a negative thing, as some claim, to point out a fault or error. As a matter of fact, it's a question of, let's call it, analysis within the field of loving inclusiveness. DK is often saying, let me help you analyze your situation for yourself. So repeating, it is not a negative thing, as some claim, to point out a fault or error. As a matter of fact, it can be a great corrective and save the individual from far worse disaster. Going on, he says, as the clear light of the soul pours in, let us say, devoid of glamour and illusion and not subject to the chaos of the ever speculative lower mind, what Masamoria calls the cerebral sinuosity of the mind. What a word. That's not the light of the soul. So repeating, as the clear light of the soul pours in, it reveals the personality for what it is. And I want to say that can be a hard experience because one's foibles, one's mistaken tendencies, one's glamours and illusions and chaotic thinking will be revealed. It's sometimes hard to bear the recriminations that come with that revelation. Going on, he says, if true dispassion is practiced, I'll say it's an emotional attitude, right? This group of disciples can see things as they are and remain untouched by the revelation of the desirable or the undesirable qualities. So what do we see? A kind of detachment from the often glamorous states of emotion that otherwise might captivate us. DK goes on, if you are depressed or irritated or hurt by such revelation, it indicates a basic lack of dispassion and proves attachment to the personality and to the opinion of others. There is an old saying, they say, what do they say? Let them say. And by that kind of mantra, one learns to live in a dispassionate manner. Okay, so that was the first major point, that no one believes unless they have the experience. And that if we react negatively through depression, irritation, hurt feelings, etc., to the revelations, to the straightforward revelations of the Master, then it just indicates to us that we are not succeeding in a dispassionate attitude, which is certainly necessary to help rid ourselves of prevailing glamours, and that we are just too attached to the instrument, to the personality, and what ends up being the dweller on the threshold as the opponent of the angel of the presence and of our soul nature in general. well, we have to be ready for disclosure. We will be found out. The group gaze or the gaze of the master will reveal to us what we do and what we are, and how do we respond to that? Do we respond or do we react through all our old habit patterns? That's going to be a question for all of us as we continue with our training in the new age. And certainly, there are many of us, maybe all of us, who really adhere to the master's words, who will be in a state of ongoing training. And hopefully, with the master in physical incarnation, not too far away, to impart what must be imparted in a manner that is difficult to impart if the master is on one plane and we are on another. So the physical presence of the master, we've been learning, is really important, not absolutely essential under all circumstances, but important if certain achievements are to be attained. Now I'm just kind of marking this out a little bit. The second point, secondly, it is essential that all disciples in an ashram should be contemplatives. Let me say it's the fourth stage of meditation. Concentration, meditation, maybe, gosh, it might be considered to be the third stage, contemplation. But of course, there are all degrees of contemplation. Some very, very high ones, of which the state of samadhi is an example. Anyway, we are asked to be contemplatives. Okay. And then he goes on and says, but contemplatives in the occult sense and not the mystical. It's as if we have all our wits about us and we can really handle the personal world, and that we don't simply drift off into some exalting fantasy based on very, very high feeling. So all of us really at this stage in our development are trying to make sure that we can switch from being the mystic to being the true occultist. And of course, this does not mean that we abandon the Neptunian mystical sensitivity. Going on, he says, in any meditation work which you are doing or may in the future do, your aim should be to achieve as rapidly as possible the highest point in the meditative process, passing quickly through the stages of concentration, alignment and meditation, to contemplation. And what we see here is that he holds it in the third order, and it is associated particularly with the sign Libra. In contemplation, we kind of get inside the object of our meditation and realize our oneness with that upon which we are meditating. So, you know, we're supposed to be contemplatives, but probably not so many of us yet are that. So the stages are of meditation, that is, Leo concentration, Virgo alignment meditation, Libra contemplation, Scorpio, believe it or not, illumination, Sagittarius inspiration, and Capricorn initiation. All those eyes, you know, followed by Aquarius, which what can we call it? Universalization, and then another eye as the acme of it all, Pisces identification. So go through these rapidly until we reach the stage of true contemplation, which I think involves the erasing of boundaries, or at least the beginning of that, with regard to any object of contemplation. DK goes on, having achieved that high point, you should strive to preserve it and should learn thus to function as a soul in its own world. Let me say, he seems to be saying that the soul is a contemplative, and that to truly be a contemplative, we have to slip into identification as a soul. And now, how many of us succeed in preserving this? I imagine we all have some work to do. So repeating, having achieved that high point of contemplation, you should strive to preserve it and should learn thus to function as a soul in its own world. And let me say, that would mean really successful meditation. In the beginning of Letters on Occult Meditation, he basically says, you're not succeeding in your meditation because you are not meditating within the egoic lotus or causal body. You're meditating maybe as a high grade aspiring personality, but there is a difference between meditating that way and meditating as the soul. So repeating, you should strive to preserve that high state, it, and should learn thus to function as a soul in its own world, contemplating the world of energies in which all initiates work, and in which you each must someday, in this life or another, take your place. Well, we could pause and say, ask a simple question. Do we actually know how to meditate as a soul? Or are we merely striving as a high-grade personality towards the possibility of soul consciousness? He does want us to learn to meditate as a soul. And we will know when that eventuates, when that clicks in, when our perspective has changed, because an entirely new experience will be ours. This status, if I may call it by such a name, must be carefully striven for, accurately observed, when in any way attained, and an exact record of impression kept. So let us say that that's a question of maintaining one's spiritual diary in a way that is a record of the kinds of higher experiences that may have come to us, and under what circumstances. He goes on to say, you should therefore constitute a group of active contemplatives, and the results will be facilitated if you ponder upon and struggle for the first condition of your group existence. What is it? Group unity. And let us say that if you find anything within yourself which is militating against the production of group unity, then whatever it is, it has to be cast out, cast aside, but of course, it also has to be understood. It's no use just throwing something away if you don't understand its nature and its origin. It will, as it were, you know, come back to bite you when you least expect it. So we can see it is a demanding mental process that will advance us on the path of discipleship, and an imaginative process, along with the use of certain antichoronic words of power. It's a science. And it just doesn't come to us casually. Of course, we may be surprised by an experience, but the occultly scientific method of approach wants to be able to replicate that experience. And that would make our internal life far more secure. Now we have just a little bit more in this section. And we've been basically looking at some of the things we have to keep in mind and some of the things we have to do as ever more progressive members of the group, a group of active contemplatives. Now, even becoming a contemplative in one's own right is not easy. The word is sometimes used loosely. Now, we say, oh, go contemplate that. But what do we really do? Is it real contemplation? Is it from the soul level? Because basically, it is the soul, or angel of the presence, that is the contemplative. And we have to slip inside that point of view that we know as of the soul. So the fundamental here is basically group unity, which it says, DK says, this group unity, which will have its roots in united group meditation. I'll add that how important it is that under a particular purpose, the group meditate together, thus producing cohesion, unity, harmony, coherence, the law of coherence, a second ray systemic law. But if a group meditates together, which doesn't necessarily mean all of them at the same time and in the same place, then we will come, that group will come closer to producing the desirable unity. So repeating, DK says, this group unity which will have its roots in united group meditation or in the contemplative life, wherein the soul knows itself to be one with all other souls, must work out in some form of group activity. Let me say that it's good to be able to accomplish the unity, but what do you do with it? And it's meant to be applied. It's meant to facilitate application in service. And of course, we're asked to be contemplatives of the modern kind, which means that we are not rather uselessly stuck in the contemplation, but we manage to bring down into serviceful application the fruits of our contemplative attitude. Now, have we succeeded in doing that? You know, and I would venture a guess here that to an extent we have succeeded in doing that. But only to a certain extent. Obviously, every one of us knows that we could be a better server, and we could more greatly facilitate the serving capacity of the groups with which we are affiliated. I would say we actually know that. And how we struggle and strive and attempt to make good with the process, that is up to us, of course. So, yes. This must work out. This group unity, this contemplative group life must work out in group activity, in service. And Master DK had this very well planned. These groups of nine would really have begun a fuller service to humanity than thus far they were able to achieve, but times were difficult. Sacrifice was not sufficient, and the World War, the second part of it, was threatening to emerge and did emerge. And so for a time, the groups of nine work had to be suspended. And he reorganized things, a kind of group of 24, a new seed group, he called it. And then there also was in-person ashramic group in New York City. I think one of the areas of externalization for Master DK's ashram was going to be a New York City. And we will see how that continues to work out. Obviously, New York as a city and not as a planetary center had a strong combination of rays 2 and 3, which, in my view at least, is similar to a combination in Master DK's makeup. Well, it's hard to know the various cities in which certain externalizing masters will take up their anchor, their point of presence. But it did seem to me that New York City would be very important for Master DK as one of the 5 initial externalizing masters. So going on, he says, this should demonstrate at once in the group itself. And later on, when the unification is more complete in the world at large. So let us say he had high hopes for these seed groups. He really only organized 4 completely and partially the political group number 5. And as I say, because of the threat of the times, his responsibilities were called toward very occult work to help humanity weather the storm and survive. We don't know all he did during that war. Sometimes he gives us hints as to what the Buddha and the Christ did, and they were very active. But he too, of course, must have been active in the attempt to, well, save humanity from itself, preserve the human race, which could have gone down. And all that was a possibility which could be visioned, that is, the defeat of the human race as presently constituted, with the requirement of starting all over again to see whether a race of human beings might be raised up which did not succumb to the liabilities which at that time the human race had succumbed to, and in a way is still succumbing to, selfishness and personalism. And you kind of wonder how people can think that way. But then maybe we forget that they have not had the advantage of even the basics of the ageless wisdom. And so many of the steps in our thought process that we simply take for granted, they have not experienced at all. And that's where we come in with our need to educate those who are what can I say, red, but have the potential of going purple. And you know, if you mix the blue and the red, you do get purple. So we need many more of the purple types who at least can be open to a much wider, broader, inclusive, humanitarian attitude, instead of this tedious pursuit of personal selfishness. It seems, no matter what might happen to humanity, the personal selfishness is pursued. So, repeating then, this group activity, this should demonstrate at once in the group itself, and later on, when the unification is more complete, that is, let me say, within the group, in the world at large. So let me say clearly that DK had, and maybe still has, high hopes for these seed groups, because the experiment is far from over. Maybe another more than 175 years remains in the 275-year experiment. So DK goes on and says, it is in this way that the master's ashrams will be externalized on Earth through this group activity. These new group of world servers, related groups. So repeating, it is in this way that the master's ashrams will be externalized on Earth and the hierarchy function openly on the physical plane, and not behind the scenes as hitherto, where they have been since the end of the Great Atlantean War. They found it wisest to withdraw and provide the mysteries of initiation, yes, but not make them easy of attainment and make them a condition which had to be searched out by those who had the sense of hierarchy. DK goes into that quite thoroughly in the Esoteric Psychology, Volume 1. It's all about the establishment of the mysteries, and even though it might be said that, in a way, the forces of good, that is, the forces which hierarchy represents, succeeded in that great war, they changed their accessibility and have not been located in any truly significant way on the outer plane until this time now, this time of externalization of the hierarchy. So just imagine the hierarchy is no longer behind the scenes. Just imagine And what a ferment that will cause, and how it will demand choice of human beings who are wise enough to realize somewhat what is happening. Do you follow the Christ and his masters and their initiates, or do you continue in the same old selfish way, bowing down before the god Mammon? You know, it's the god of money. As if this symbol that we call money were more important than the true spiritual fate of the human race. And then DK goes on to say, then will come the restoration of the mysteries. Now that's a great theme, and we know that the Christ will be offering the first initiation semi-publicly, and that people will see etherically the augmentation of the light in those who are to be initiated, and they will know of the justification then of the initiatory process, and even the second initiation will be offered a little more interiorly, but still in a way on the physical plane. At least the process will go on there, even though the inner modus operandi involves the causal body and higher planes. Master R will also be involved. He is the great seventh ray, third ray master, and his third ray component being, rather his seventh ray component, being for so long an initiate upon the seventh ray, will facilitate the exposure of humanity to the idea of the mysteries. Radical, revolutionary things are in the offing. And just the way one is sure that in medieval times, the kind of world we have now was almost totally unimaginable. And even more recently, our present world would have been to most completely unimaginable. So the way of living in the Aquarian age is for us, even now, with our slightly advanced knowledge of these processes, rather unimaginable. And there's how many, well over 2,000 years ahead until that age elapses, giving way to an age of still more general and higher initiation, the age of Capricorn. So we have to be patient, but at the same time, work as if there were no time to lose. Well, friends, I don't see the value in going on to part two of this section, section one in Dinah, volume one, until the next time. So we are at page 12. Maybe it's not looking like so much progress, but if we can think deeply about the recommendations so far, to really have the experience and to become a group of contemplatives based on group unity, if we can do that, we're already ahead of the game. So this is the end of program seven. And now it is the 6th/7th of July, 21. And we've gone from page 10, 11 to what? Page 12. not a lot of pages, but a lot to think about. We'll begin with program number 8, hopefully tomorrow. It's a busy day for me, but hopefully. I'm just going to put the X's there, because we just don't know what will be possible. There are ask programs to do on triangles. But we are really ready to enter a new section. And I'll try to keep, what shall I say, plugging along here, so that there can be made available to you yet another way of using Master DK's words in this very important section, and maybe some illumination from the links that I try to make or which come to me as I am reading his words. So let's say that Tuya and I and the whole team of communicators wish you love and many blessings and profound study and deepening meditation and the wisdom to know how to apply what it is that the Master is attempting to teach. We could read just superficially, but Master DK says, read, please, read with care what I have written. Read more carefully what I have written. And I think, commentary in a written form on these pages already exists on Makara, but there's something here which adds to our careful attention and maybe inspiration to apply what it is we're learning about, okay? So, lots of love, many blessings, and we'll get back to you. I never know when or how, but hopefully it will be tomorrow and there won't be too many things to do to make that possible.